All right, welcome back to the Brandon Lowe Show here on 1300 1340 of the Jock. It's been a good show so far. I had Coach Bias from Parkersburg High over in over there in his winning ways beat Bluefield earlier. 5 days ago now, they'll be taking on John Marshall this Friday. A 5-2 John Marshall team. So as they continue their winning ways, well, we're going to talk some Big 12 football. Matthew Postens over at HeartlandCollegeSports.com. Always good to have Matt on the show, man. Welcome back.
Hey, good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, my friend. And, you know, last weekend, obviously, really the only matchup, and I think it was the only matchup, Kansas and West Virginia, because everybody else was kind of doing that thing where we have some scheduling stuff where you have the 2 weeks in between because just in case there's some postponements. And then, of course, Baylor with the whole COVID situation. But let's start with the Mountaineers in Kansas. I mean, it was expected that West Virginia was going to win that game. The spread was, I think, entering was somewhere around 22-23. No less miles. Obviously, there's a lot of work with Kansas. But West Virginia showed that extremely improved run game. Lenny Brown now fourth in the country in rushing, 195, two touchdowns. Still a passing game. You want to see a little more out of the passing game. And defense now number one in the country. But the real thing in the narrative is, yes, West Virginia played well, but is West Virginia for real? That's the thing I think everybody's wondering.
Yeah, I think that's a really good discussion point for everyone in the Big 12. I mean, Joel Klatt coming out and saying that he felt, you know, West Virginia could actually be a contender in the conference. I'm a little cool on that, but the things that he pointed out are the same things that could lead one to believe that they could be a player in the conference because, A, they're playing much better now. They're playing much better now than I thought they would be playing at this point in the season. Like you said, Letty Brown really has given them some stability in the running game, which they really need. The defense is a lot better than it was last year. I mean, statistically, they put up really good numbers. But if you watch them play, they passed the eye test, too. And they've got a schedule where they got some nice breaks early on, aside from the Oklahoma State game. They're playing teams that they have a good chance of beating, whether they're at home or on the road. And that allows them to build momentum going into that more difficult schedule in November. I mean, they've still got to play Texas, NOU, and Iowa State, and Kansas State. Basically, every team that you would consider to be a contender at this point, they've still got to play aside from Oklahoma State. So if they get to the Big 12 championship game, they will have earned their way there because they will have beaten just about everybody in the conference to get there. And with a year as wide open as it is, you can't discount them at this point because they still have a little margin for error. And because they have all those really good teams in front of them, they still control their own destiny.
Yeah, certainly. I was talking earlier on the show, my dad and I were having a conversation. He said, well, the three teams that I see is Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. Now, those first two obviously jump out because of obvious reasons for Oklahoma State. Their talent, Wallace, Hubbard, their defense, return 10 or 11 starters. They have NFL talent on that defense. That makes sense for Oklahoma State. Iowa State makes sense. You got Brock Purdy, who seems like he's been playing there for 40 years. You got, you know, a defense that's experienced. Matt Campbell is one of the better coaches in the country. He's been on that short list in the NFL for a while now. That jumps out to me, but, you know, I tend to pump the brakes a little bit on West Virginia. One, I know the history. I've been a fan well long enough to know that, you know, as soon as you got the hype, there's usually something that where you hit that brick wall. One of those weaknesses are exposed. And I think the biggest weakness is it's not necessary statistically as far as the passing game, right? Because Deggy had his 318 yards and a couple touchdowns, but it's the situational moments that just aren't there. The big third downs you need to convert with the passing game, maybe a red zone situation. Drop balls have been a big thing with wide receivers. I think there's going to be moments where, yes, you have that running game, but you're going to have to rely on that passing game to pick you up some either big third downs or push you down the field quickly. Like if there isn't a situation where you got a minute 30 to win a football game or less and you can't run the ball and maybe you have one timeout, those are the type of things that may be concerning down the stretch.
Yeah, and I imagine that Neil Brown and the staff are thinking about that going into this weekend's game with Texas Tech because this really is that last game where they can kind of make some fine-tuned adjustments against a team that, you know, frankly, I know they're only a three-point favorite on the road, but I feel like they're a much better team than Texas Tech at this point. I mean, their next five games, like I said, you know, it's Kansas State, Texas, TCU, Oklahoma, Iowa State. So it's a gauntlet from here on in, and they're going to have to start converting some of those third downs. They're going to have to make sure they control the football and possess the football, win the turnover game. Those are the things that coaches always talk about, converting and defending on third down, maintaining possession of the football and creating turnovers, and then just avoiding giving up too many of those big plays in a particular game. And, you know, I feel like West Virginia's close from a passing game standpoint. They've got a lot of really good weapons all around Daigie. It's just really a matter of starting to put it together. And that's where the run game can help you, because if you have a good, solid running game, teams have to put eight players in the box to defend you, and that's going to open up more one-on-one situations for the wide receivers, and that's going to give Daigie time to find them.
Yeah, certainly, and catch the ball, right? They get that ball.
You got to catch the football. Yeah. You got to catch the football. That is definitely a bit of a problem right now.
Reese Smith, who was the freshman that came in, who played at Neil Brown's high school, who broke Neil Brown's records there in Kentucky. I like that kid, too. I think he could be an answer at slot because Simmons has had his issues. He's had personal issues, and then he's just not producing on the field. We saw him fumble that first drive. I think that could be a kid that can come in and do some things, too. So they do have some capable wide receivers, like you said. It's just, you know, and then Sam James, you know, I was on Pete's podcast over there with you guys, and he asked me about wide receivers. I said, well, we have a lot of young talent, and there's a lot of ability there. You know, the Wheaton kid's good, but Sam James is the guy that you thought was going to really excel even into the next year, because there was flashes last year of brilliance and his athletic ability and getting out in space. And you're like, man, this kid's dynamic, and he is. He's just struggling this year so far.
Yeah, it's a bit mystifying. I mean, I really thought that he would build on last year, and there's still time to do that. But I think the nice thing when you look at them just across the board is you got four players in that team that had 10 or more catches, and one of them is Letty Brown. So the fact that he's a weapon they can use out of the backfield as a passing weapon, along with being a rushing weapon, that helps too, because now you can run three wide sets with a running back. And because they know Letty Brown is the threat to catch the football, they have to defend him one-on-one with a linebacker. So there's more opportunities with that happening to create mismatches that are going to benefit Winston Wright Jr. and Sam James and Bryce Ward Wheaton. All three of those guys who are having really solid years right now. But, you know, sometimes it's good to have a good three or four set of really good wide receivers who can do good things for you, as opposed to having one big dog and three guys that are kind of lagging behind.
Yeah, I agree. If you're just joining us here on the Brandon Lowe Show on 1300, 1340 of the Jock, we got Matthew Poston's HeartlandCollegeSports.com. Does a great job. He's got other things he does, too, multiple publications. If I had to try to list off all the stuff you do, Matt, I'd be here all day. We wouldn't even have a chance to get
the appearance.
So let's move on from West Virginia. They'll take on Texas Tech, 5:30 Eastern, and ESPN2. Weird kickoff, too, by the way. That is a weird kickoff time.
Yeah, that is. And I think now with the Big Ten coming back, you know, Fox especially is now trying to cram the Big Ten games in, because I think when they built the schedule originally, they weren't expecting the Big Ten to play this year. So the Big 12 got the really nice time slots on Fox. They got doubleheaders every weekend. So that's going to come to an end this weekend on Fox, at least from a national perspective.
Hey, before we get to the rest of the Big 12, what do you think about the Big Ten start late? Mostly because of the situation with the top 25. Ohio State, there's no secret if you follow me on Facebook. I spent time in Columbus. I do root for the Buckeyes. But I do not take up for them when they move up spots when they haven't played a football game. What do you think about that? What do you think about Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, all those teams being thrown in the top 25 without even playing a game?
If I were a voter, and I don't know what their criteria is necessarily, if I were a voter and there was a team that were in this situation, and this is a unique situation, but if they hadn't played a game, they wouldn't be in my poll. Now, once Ohio State plays a game and I see them play, then I would decide where they go in that top 25, but I wouldn't put them in my poll, honestly. And I think that punishes teams that have been playing this year. I'm one of those guys that I think would probably drive people nuts, because my number one thing is, did you win the game? And even if you only beat Our Lady of Perpetual Sorrow by a point, I'm going to keep you where you are in my poll that week because you won the game, and that's the most important thing to me. Probably drives some people nuts. But, you know, I wouldn't put Ohio State or Michigan or any of them in my poll until they played at least one game.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I really, from a Big 12 perspective, Oklahoma State is being held back from being any higher, because Oklahoma State could be number 5 right now. instead of six, which I know it's just one spot back, but moves you that much closer to the top four. So I'm just saying it, you know, and then, of course, that'll be a whole different thing whenever they vote for that. But all right. So Kansas State, I bring this game up because, you know, it's the two teams inside the state of Kansas. You know, they have a long history, whatnot. It seems like, too, Kansas, at least in the beginning of a lot of these matchups for most years, plays Kansas State tough. Kansas State still doesn't have their starting quarterback. So is this a situation where Kansas can maybe play them pretty well? I know Kansas has a decent defense. I will say that watching them against West Virginia. Offensively, they struggle at quarterback. Puka Williams, that whole thing about, I think he said he was going to sit out the rest of the year. So that's an issue. Your best player on the entire team is now not playing. Is there any chance that Kansas can at least put a scare in Kansas State this weekend?
Maybe in the first quarter, and I think that's only if Kansas State turns the ball over a couple of times. I mean, you know, Puka Williams opting out, they still have a good running back that can take up that spot in Belton Gardner. He actually leads the team in rushing right now, 247 yards, believe it or not. But the quarterback situation's a mess. They just don't have a lot of talent. They made a commitment early on when Les got there. They were going to build through high school players and high school recruiting because I think they feel like they can keep players longer that way in their system, and they don't have to take so many chances on JUCO transfers like his predecessors were doing. So it's going to take them time to get themselves back, at least to a point where they can qualify for a bowl game, honestly. So unless Kansas State is its own worst enemy, I see them winning by probably 20, 30 points at least on Saturday.
Yeah, line on that, 19.5. Of course, that'll go up and down all the way to kickoff, but sitting at 19.5, mostly up. It's going to go up probably a couple of points there, but so that should be no problem. I agree with you there. Oklahoma TCU, interesting matchup here. Of course, TCU, Gary Patterson, defense always for the Horned Frogs. But, of course, they always have a decent offense as well to go along with that. And, you know, TCU is, despite the fact that the record, they have played pretty well at times. I mean, they're kind of an up-and-down team right now. Oklahoma the same way offensively. It's no secret. Lincoln Riley, he's always got it, well-tuned and going. But the defense on their side is having extreme trouble stopping the opposition. So this is an interesting game for me because, you know, TCU looked good at times. Oklahoma has their moments, and it's Oklahoma. It's a noon kickoff. It's in Fort Worth. The line right now is 6.5 for OU. If I'm kind of on the side of the betting side, I almost want to take TCU in this. Am I wrong?
I've covered a lot of these games in person, and it always seems as if the game is closer in Fort Worth than it is in Norman, just the games that I've covered. You're right about TCU. They played everybody tough. They played K-State tough at home. They played Texas tough on the road. They played Iowa State tough at home. They've probably had, to me, the most brutal schedule coming out of the gate because they've had practically every contender you can think of in their first four Big 12 games. I think the problem TCU is going to have is I'm just not sold that their offense is in a place where they can consistently compete with teams week in and week out. I think that Max Duggan, their quarterback, I don't think his job is like totally safe. I think there could be some times where you might see Gary Patterson turn to another guy like Matthew Downing. They've got some really good weapons on the edge. The defense is always really, really good. And the great thing about this game for Gary Patterson is that he's had 2 weeks to prepare for it. And he's really good coming out of bye weeks. But same time, so is OU. They've had 2 weeks to prepare. They're coming off a big win. Lincoln Riley's had 2 weeks to really kind of fine-tune Spencer Rattler. Alex Grinch, their defensive coordinator, had 2 weeks to kind of figure out what's working for this defense and how to maximize that. I think OU will go into Fort Worth, and I think they will cover because they've just got more offensive weapons than TCU does.
And then I look at it from the perspective of back to the Oklahoma defensive woes. It could be in a situation where TCU might figure it out on offense because of that. Is there a chance for that?
It's possible. I think the thing for me is Max Duggan's their leading passer and their leading rusher. They need some contributions from running backs outside of their quarterback. If they can start getting their running game going again with guys outside of Duggan, then I think they could actually play the time of possession game very well against Oklahoma. But they haven't shown me enough from a running game standpoint to tell me that they've got the kinds of backs that can do that.
Okay, moving over to Texas Baylor. As I mentioned, Baylor, the COVID situation, which, of course, West Virginia fans weren't too happy about the AD over at Baylor and his comments about the locker room situation. I'm sure you saw those comments. Rhodes was not very happy.
Hey, guess what? Guess what? Every Rhodes locker room is cramped, dude. All of them. Trust me. I've been enough of them to know.
Yeah.
They're all cramped.
Right. So, you know, that kind of just, you know, went in one year and out the other. So no one really took that. It made news for a little bit, and then it went away. But
yeah.
They're back in action. They got Texas. I still like Charlie Brewer a lot. I think he's a really good quarterback. Texas, of course, you know, they got a really good quarterback, too. I haven't seen a lot of Texas. I watched them against Oklahoma. I tuned in a little bit against TCU. Baylor, obviously, I got to see. They took on West Virginia. I don't really know where to go with this one. I think this is the biggest one where I don't know where to lean this weekend, because they both kind of show some good things on both sides. But Texas, again, has been having trouble with their defense. They're similar to Oklahoma. It's like they have presence on offense. Their defense can't really stop anybody. I almost tend to lean towards Baylor, but it is there in Texas. And it's not a long travel, but, you know, Texas plays pretty good at home for the most part. I don't know where to go with this game because they both have their own issues in different parts. But then I almost want to lean towards Baylor because I think they play defense a lot better than Texas does.
Yeah, it's a head-scratcher because, you know, Texas's defense has been so porous that I'm actually kind of surprised at this point. I mean, they're basically a Texas Tech, you know, brain melt away from being 0-3 in conference. And, you know, I've watched every Texas game this year, and it's like they play really well, really well, really well, and then for like a quarter and a half, they just dismantle before your eyes, and especially on the defensive side of the football. I realize they're adopting a new scheme this year. That's part of it. But they've still got talent, and they've still got, you know, guys who are playing some really good football on that side of the ball. But like Oklahoma, their biggest problem is they're giving up too many big plays. So if Baylor can take advantage of that and get the ball vertical and get it down the field and create some big plays on offense, then I think that gives them a good chance to win. I think Baylor's problem is they just have so much rust. They've played two games so far this year, both in conference. They didn't get any non-conference games. They've now missed, I think, 2 weeks due to a bye week and COVID. You know, that can be a good thing from a preparation standpoint, but, you know, I've seen both of their games this year, and they just don't seem like they're very sharp. You know, when I watch them play, I mean, they played Kansas, and it's Kansas, so, I mean, you can't tell much. But when they went up and played West Virginia, they were all right, but they still didn't seem like they had figured it out. So I think Texas will win the game, but I wouldn't expect them to cover.
Yeah, I was actually, I mean, obviously West Virginia's defense is playing at a high level, and I was actually kind of shocked, though, productivity out of Baylor's offense, because you're so used to Baylor. I mean, again, you got a new head coach and, you know, there's a different staff and all that stuff. But, you know, I was actually kind of shocked because I was expecting a really, really big test for West Virginia's defense, because Baylor, as we know, they can throw the ball around with the best of anybody the past how many years. So I was kind of shocked that down the field wasn't there. And again, that's credit to West Virginia's defense, but there just really wasn't a lot there. I wasn't impressed. But, you know, again, Baylor's defense looked pretty decent. That's why I think that's going to be the difference in this contest. I just think there's going to be some type of play that Baylor makes on defense that allows them to win. So I am leaning more towards Baylor in this one.
It should be interesting, because I think that if Texas's corners don't come to play, then you'll see some of those big plays start to pop up.
Yeah. All right, the big one this weekend, we were talking about them, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. And that's a 3:30 contest. That one's sitting at 3.5 for Oklahoma State. Of course, they are the home team, so you throw some points over there for the home team. You know, Oklahoma State had a ton of hype going into this year for good reason. We've mentioned them before. You know, Spencer Sanders has been battling that injuries and stuff, but Iowa State's just so solid. And every year, I am a believer. I know I've talked to you about this before. I'm like, this is Iowa State's year. This is the year that Iowa State wins the Big 12, because they pick up some big wins, and then they kind of fall on their face later on in the schedule, and then you go, okay, well, they made a bowl game. Despite all that, though, we got to be impressed with what Matt Campbell's been able to do with this program. this is a tough one, too, because, you know, it is tough to play down in Stillwater. But Iowa State just plays so solid on both sides, and I am a true believer in Brock Purdy. I mean, I really started to believe when the whole thing with West Virginia and that collapse, and I really started to believe into Iowa State and what they were doing. Tell me what you think of these two teams, what you've seen so far, and how each team could pull this one out.
I think both teams are Big 12 contenders at this point. You know, Iowa State, you know, they seem to play well whether they're at home or whether they're on the road. And I think that really is a credit to just how they prepare every week. But if you go back and you look at last year, we call it Brocktober because Brock Purdy seems to have a great month of October. But this team's one loss last year was to Oklahoma State. And he threw three second-half interceptions in that game. So Oklahoma State obviously knows some things that they can attack when it comes to Brock Purdy that maybe some other teams in the conference don't have. And plus, they have a better defense this year than they had last year. I think they're better at the point of attack. They're better on the second level. Their corners are playing some very good football right now. This could be one of the best Oklahoma State defenses I've seen in quite some time. And they're not, you know, I don't think they're all the way there yet. I don't think they've figured everything out yet. And with the 2 weeks off due to the bye week and due to COVID for Baylor, I'm a little concerned more on the offensive side of Mike Gundy about the rust of, you know, Spencer Sanders if he starts having not played, you know, basically in about a month. Do you start Shane Illingworth instead, or do you do the solution of playing both quarterbacks at different times in the game? I think that would be a very precarious move for Gundy because of just the inconsistency that can create in your offense. But, you know, I covered this game in Stillwater in 2015. That was Matt Campbell's first year there. Oklahoma State won that game by 3. It was a tough game. It was a hard-fought game. Iowa State, you could just see it on the field. They were starting to come, and here they are. But I really think even with the lack of home field advantage, the fact that there won't be a full Boone Pickens Stadium on Saturday, I still like Oklahoma State to win this game because I think their defense is a little bit better. And I think you're going to start to see their running game start to make a bigger difference on the offensive side of the football than they have to this point this season.
That one's at 3:30 on Fox, so getting some prime time there, Big 12. Looking forward to that contest. Matt, before I let you off the show here, the 2021 Big 12 SEC Challenge was announced January 30th for basketball. A lot of really good matchups in there, as usual. They put Kansas against Tennessee, Kentucky against Texas, and then the Mountaineers will host the Gators. A lot of hype around the Mountaineers and a lot of hype around the Big 12 again. What was your overall take as far as the matchups for that challenge?
I think they did a really good job this year. I mean, I was working on my top 25 returning Big 12 players last night as we start to roll out our basketball coverage on the site in a couple of weeks. I mean, they did a really good job of pairing what I think are really like talented teams. And I think West Virginia and Florida match up nicely. I think that Oklahoma State and Arkansas are going to match up nicely. Baylor and Auburn is going to be a great game,
yeah.
Honestly. That's going to be a fantastic showdown. You know, even TCU and Missouri, I think that's going to be a good game. Same with Iowa State, Mississippi State. I mean, the last couple of years, there have been a couple of games where teams got paired with another team, whether it be SEC or Big 12, where the matchup just didn't look really – it looked really one-sided, and it ended up becoming a one-sided game. You could kind of see it coming 3 months beforehand. But I look at this list, and I'm like, yeah, I think every single game on here is going to be a really, really good game. You know, there's nothing that leads me to believe, even Kansas State and Texas A&M, both of those teams had a very hard year last year. I think that could end up being a really nice game, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought top to bottom, and, yeah, that Auburn-Baylor game, I should have mentioned that, too. That's going to be massive because, of course, we know what Baylor, what they're going to present coming into this year. And, you know, the cool part about basketball this year is we didn't get the full season, right? We didn't get the postseason.
No, we didn't.
So it's going to be interesting to see these kids come back, and there's going to be a lot of hungry teams because they're ready to get back and play some college basketball. And talking to Huggins on Monday, he was, you know, he's really hyped about this squad. You know, he said that they get along just as good as that 2010 team he had that went to the Final Four, and they got a lot of talent, and folks here in the state of West Virginia are super excited to see that team play.
They really should be. They've got a lot of guys returning. I think with COVID and everything else, I think both them and Baylor benefited from the fact that some players that might have gone to the NBA decided not to and stuck around for another year. I mean, Tshiebwe could have gone. You know, Culver could have gone. But I think with everything going on, they decided to stick around one more year. And I'm still doing all my research, but there's one of the biggest problem that I thought West Virginia had last year was they just didn't have a legitimate point guard. I think Bob Huggins may have the player that solves that problem, and he's that junior college prospect from Temple College in Temple, Texas. He was one of the best point guards in junior college last year. Unfortunately, I cannot remember his name right now, but watch him as they practice over the next few weeks and get ready for the season. If he can solve their point guard problem and allow them to move Miles McBride to the off-guard position, they're going to be really hard to deal with.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Of course, the challenge you mentioned, COVID. You may have moments where you got to figure out if you can play with less guys or not. Right? That's what Huggins was talking about. There might be a situation where you go, well, can we win with seven? Can we win with this many guys? Yeah. So that's gonna be a challenge, of course. Matt, I've already taken enough of your time. Appreciate you as always coming on, talking some Big 12 football, and of course, when basketball moves in, we'll talk some Big 12 basketball as well.
All right, sounds good. Go pay some bills.